Good morning. This is Jane Wells. I'm not quite sure how my husband usually carries these out, but this is log set S2 log 15. And in front of me is the charming Miss Jane Austen. It really is a pleasure to meet you, Miss Austen.
A pleasure to meet you too. A fellow Jane is always a welcome acquaintance.
Indeed. I've always been such a fan of the name. It isn't my real name, you see. My Christian name is Amy Catherine, but I've never thought it suits me that much. Jane is much nicer.
I'm glad you think so. I do like to use it in my own works occasionally. It feels a little like a secret note to myself. More tea?
Ooh, yes, please. Using the time machine really does take it out of me. How my husband keeps this up is beyond me.
I must admit that I was deeply disturbed when you first arrived on that contraption.
I really am sorry about the vase. I'm happy to pay for it.
No need. In any case, it was rather an ugly one that I was glad to see the back of. Since it was first presented to me, I have been contriving ways to dispose of it in an agreeable manner that will not offend the giver of the gift. You appear to have saved me the trouble.
Oh, well, no harm done then.
Mrs. Wells, if I may ask, how did you acquire the name Jane? Did you name yourself?
My husband, Herbert, gave it to me as a nickname. I'm dreadfully fond of him, even though he's not always quite there.
My dear Mrs. Wells, one would usually hope, I think, that anyone in possession of a husband would want him to be entirely there.
He's a wonderful man, truly. It's just, well, he's terribly intelligent, but his common sense skills leave an awful lot to be desired. Normally he would be the one interviewing you, but he's at home in bed at the moment with a simply dreadful cold.
You know, I'm sure that being married must be truly fulfilling for some women. But personally, I've never felt the need. I am quite content being a spinster.
Of course, you make quite a tidy income of your own without the need of one.
Never under my own name, Mrs. Wells. I have only ever been credited in print as a lady.
In my time, every school child knows your name. Your books must be some of the most well-read in England.
I'm glad to know that one day my accomplishments will be known. I'm also relieved that it won't happen in my lifetime. I fear that the attention would drive me to distraction. I have a limited tolerance for human interaction.
Why did you choose to publish under an assumed title? Was it to avoid the attention?
I thought it would have been obvious, dear. As a woman, I would need her husband to sign it for me. And of course, I am distinctly lacking one of those. Not to mention, of course, that most of society likes to maintain the illusion that women write as a hobby, rather than a living. Would you like some more tea? We get the sugar from my brother Edward. He lives up the lane at Chawton House.
I know I often find myself complaining about the role of women in my time, but I must confess, I didn't know how much worse it was in the past. Things have certainly improved in the years since.
Well, it's true that we often find ourselves in precarious positions as women, so often that I have made my living writing about it. But in a way, I have been able to use this to my advantage. Single women have a dreadful propensity for being poor, which is one very strong argument in favour of matrimony, I suppose. I find people are fascinated by the wretched state some women find themselves in, and so I am at least never short of material to write about. Cassandra and I are fortunate enough to be lent this cottage by Edward. With the money from my books to supplement it, we are usually quite well off, unlike some poor souls.
How did your brother come to own Chawton House?
It used to be owned by the Knight family, who unofficially adopted Edward when we were younger. They made him their heir. I cannot begrudge him the place, because he looks after us so very generously. Still, I much prefer living with my sister. In my opinion, few women are inclined towards intelligent conversation, and the number of men disposed to it are even fewer. Fortunately, I would say that you are one of those rare few.
You know, I've always been fascinated by the notion that you never include a single conversation between two men alone in all of your works. It makes a pleasant change to some books, where men talk so much that the women can't get a word in edgeways. Speaking of men talking constantly, in my copy of Emma, there's a dedication to Prince George.
Oh, Lord, the dedication. How I struggle to get out of that.
Didn't you want to?
Want to? I despise the man. Poor Princess Caroline. Her marriage must be simply unbearable.
Is he really that awful?
Mrs. Wells, I have met the Prince Regent, and I must make it plain that I found him a thoroughly dislikable and disreputable gentleman. Drinking, gambling, womanizing. If he had not been the Prince Regent, I would never have agreed to meet him. Really, it's scandalous. Regrettably, he's a great fan of my work. I hear he keeps copies at all his estates, and so, when he requested my presence in London, and a dedication in Emma, I could hardly refuse him.
Goodness, Herbert will be surprised to hear this one.
And that's not even starting on his librarian.
What on earth is wrong with his librarian? Who is he?
Reverend James Stainer Clark.
I see.
I see his reputation has not preceded him. What can I... Oh, let me demonstrate. Sandra's still out, I think, which should mean we have that cottage to ourselves.
What's this?
My letters from the Reverend Clark, my current unfinished projects, a letter to my sister. Oh, it's not important. I would not, of course, even dream of showing you this if you were not a mysterious time traveller from the future. As it is, I must ask you to keep this an absolute secret.
I'd be glad to. That is that a draft of persuasion I can see there?
Mrs. Wells, please don't pry too deeply into my work. I very rarely allow my early drafts to be seen by anyone at all. I am affording you a great privilege. Besides, I'm afraid that it is all dross, and at this rate I will be unable to ever publish it.
Of course, I do apologise.
Think nothing of it. Now, listen to this. He sent me this letter after we met in London. Perhaps you might delineate in some future work the habits of life and character and enthusiasms of a clergyman who should pass his time between the metropolis and the country.
No, he didn't.
He did, I assure you.
He wanted you to write him into a book.
Oh, more than that. Listen to this next suggestion. An historical romance illustrative of the august house of Coburg. The hinge! The hinge, quick! Back into the drawer!
What on earth?
Jane, dear, I've just been to see the... Oh, I didn't realise you had company. How do you do, Miss...
Mrs. Jane Wells. And you are?
Jane's sister, Cassandra. Jane, you didn't tell me that you had company.
I didn't know I was receiving it. You can go now, Cassandra.
Without even properly greeting our guest. Very well. It was a pleasure, Mrs. Wells.
My apologies, Mrs. Wells. I keep my work an utmost secret. I'm sure you understand.
Do you do that every single time?
Oh, yes.
But why not get the hinge fixed?
I couldn't possibly do that, Mrs. Wells. It warns me whenever someone is approaching.
But what if someone is simply retrieving a small object, or cleaning, or bringing you tea?
No exceptions.
Even if they have no intention of looking at your work? Even tea?
Even then.
Doesn't that seem a little excessive?
Not at all. Even if they do not intend to look at my work, it is all too easy to do something you do not intend to do. To look at my work without permission would be tantamount to looking inside my head.
I suppose I can understand that. I get rather protective over my own writings, and I am certainly nowhere near ready to show them to the world. I think it really is extraordinarily brave of you to publish your work.
Thank you. I must say that it is less bravery and more my own vanity than anything else. I am proud of what I write, and I like to know that others are reading it too.
Oh, you do remind me of Herbert. He's exactly the same. Are you working on Persuasion at the moment, then?
I am, although so far in its short life it has done nothing but give me grief. I have just completed the first draft. I take it that it is a complete work in the future?
Absolutely. It's one of my favourites.
If I may ask, what is it about it that you particularly enjoy? What should I refine in my next draft?
Well, above everything, I've always loved the maturity that you bring to it. Anne, the lead, is an older character than your usual heroines, and the passion, the hesitant denial of her true feelings towards Wentworth. Oh, the suspense. I hate to hear you talk about all women as if they were fine ladies instead of rational creatures. None of us want to be in calm waters all our lives.
Gracious, Mrs. Wells. I had no idea you felt so strongly about it.
Oh, I do. I greatly admire all of your works. In fact... Oh, Lord.
Into the drawer again. Quick, quick, quick!
Sorry to interrupt, just getting my pen. Can I bring you two anything?
No, thank you, Cassandra.
Oh, you don't have to. Never mind.
Where were we?
We were talking about your current writing projects. But I'm actually more interested in hearing about you. Have you always lived in Hampshire?
All my life, except when I lived in Bath and Oxford. There was a tremendous atmosphere for writing in Bath, but I'm afraid the constant bustle and busyness grated on my nerves. I felt the same about Southampton before I had to depart after contracting typhus. I have little time for the constant demands and expectations of high society.
But you write about it so well.
That's kind of you to say, dear. I'm afraid my neighbours don't have quite the same taste for literature as you do.
Oh?
Yes, I like to keep notes of all the encouragements my neighbours give me. Let's see. Mrs. Bramston of Oakley Hall told me that she thought Sense and Sensibility and Pride and Prejudice were both downright nonsense.
Goodness, really?
Oh, this one is rather good. Dear Mrs. Dickweed said that if she had not known the author, she could hardly have got through Emma.
I can't believe she would actually say something like that. Why do you keep a record of such abysmal reviews? I think I should cry into my pillow if someone were to say such awful things about my own work.
To tell the truth, Mrs. Wells, I do not want people to be very agreeable, as it saves me the trouble of liking them a great deal.
Miss Austen, I must confess that you are much stranger than I thought you would be.
Well, in turn I must confess that you are exactly as strange as I thought a time traveller would be.
I'll take that as a compliment. Before I go, may I ask you one last question?
By all means. This has been a most diverting afternoon.
What inspired you to begin writing in your distinctive style? Your recurring themes of society, financial insecurity, the landed gentry. It sets itself apart from the other works being published around this time.
Truth be told, I find that most novels published nowadays are paltry, poorly written tripe.
Oh!
I wanted to reject these ridiculous notions of Gothic literature that's being pumped out. Everything being published is escapist, fantastical nonsense. I wanted to write novels set in the real world, regarding real people, real relationships, real scenarios. I wanted to bring people back to Earth.
You certainly produce some tremendously witty satire.
Why, thank you. It brings some comfort to know that my works are still bringing you amusement, however far into the future. Will you have some more tea before you go?
No, thank you. I should probably be off. Oh, before I go...
Yes?
Would you please sign the time machine?
Of course.
I just wanted to say that meeting you in person has been such an incredible experience. I know that they say you should never meet your heroes. Herbert says it all the time. In this case, I really do believe...
The drawer! The drawer! I am a slave to these interruptions.
Jane, dear, I was wondering if you've seen my shawl around here.
Cassandra? Please, you know I'm busy.
Oh, is that a new novel draft
well,
I see there?
Well, on that note, I think I'd better sign off. I am Jane Wells, this was the legendary Jane Austen, and I think I'm beginning to understand why Herbert seems so full of regret after meeting Victor Hugo.
This podcast was brought to you by Turpentine Productions. You can find us on Tumblr at Turpentine Productions, Twitter at HG Wells Regrets, and Facebook at HG Wells Has His Regrets. Or check out our website, www.hgwellshashisregrets.wordpress.com. This episode of H.G. Wells Has His Regrets was written and produced by Francesca Mylord Ford, with assistance from Emily Hancock and historical knowledge from John Felton. Music composed by Emily Hancock and Joash Kari, and sound design by Howard White. This show was created and executive produced by Emily Hancock. Catherine Jane Wells was voiced by Georgia Fisk. Jane Austen was voiced by Helen Fullerton. Cassandra Austen was voiced by Lucian Spooner. This podcast is fictitious, and all characters within are merely fictional interpretations of the people they're based on, and are not to be taken as serious or accurate portrayals. We'll end the episode with a quote from Jane Austen's Northanger Abbey. The person, be it gentleman or lady, who has not had pleasure in a good novel must be intolerably stupid. Thanks for listening.